Come out of nowhere, a little bit of hand from a friend. And next minute, I was on iTunes and I had the podcast. I had a website. I don't understand any of it, so all be on me. The Tito one, I got. What do I call it? I got old school Jose Aldo.
Oh wow!
Which I almost bought him with a WEC one, and I got outbid. And like, I wish now back that far, like I bidded harder on the WEC one because that would have been wicked to get.
Like, man, I didn't realize it was like bidding wars level.
Yeah, back there for sure. And I've got, yeah, I've got Aldo, I've got obviously Anderson Silva, you had to pick him up. I even had like Thiago Alves when he was just a savage back in the day.
Wow.
I was a big fan.
I could bring you in, Tito, if you wanted. He's just sitting in my house.
Adding to the right. I'd love people to bring in cool shit.
Man, I should have brought in Tito.
Yeah. We should have been an old school Nick Batman Hughes fighting team would have been something cool to restore and stuff like that. Fighting,
no.
Fighting days.
I'm horrible with self promotion, man. Like, I can't.
Yeah.
I always say, like, man, I'll probably say it again. Like, I was a good athlete, but I'm a better coach.
Well,
and I'd rather my, you know, exploits be, you know, gauged upon the quality of the athletes that I produce as opposed to, like, what I do.
And that's been the transition you've made. Obviously, you were fighting.
Yeah.
Did you get undefeated at MMA?
I was. I mean, yeah. I was undefeated.
I've seen, I think, all of your fights. Is there
three? This, I have no idea how many are online, but I have three pro fights.
Three pro fights?
Yeah.
Yeah, because there was that one you had the headgear and stuff.
Yeah,
so that was
that's
an amateur one.
Some amateur stuff.
All right, there's one that I haven't seen then. I think I was live at one as well for, it was, there was ropes and all. Okay, it was in a ring, MMA in a ring.
Yeah.
I think I was there.
That probably was MMA Down Under 2.
Yeah, I reckon I made it.
That was the one with like people keep bringing up.
Hey, is it the one I've seen? What are they bringing up?
I fought Kenny Jung.
Yeah,
and that was, I mean, that was really late notice for me. It ended up being the main event because a couple of fights fell through.
Yeah,
really close to the card. One on that day, I think Brad Thompson was scheduled to fight, and he came down with shingles and he was really bad.
Legit.
Brad Thompson is super legit. Like, in my mind, he's probably, he sticks out as the pioneer, as one of the guys that I was looking up to back in the day.
Yeah.
Even when I'm just briefly going into Rikers to do sparring days and stuff like that, seeing Brad in there and seeing him fight. So when I heard that he went down, I was just like, oh my God, what's happened to him? And he was in hospital, which is just crazy. But
damn.
So on the day of the event, I got a call saying, hey, you're the main event now. But even before that, it was like, I was scheduled to fight Kane for MMA Down Under 2.
Kane Gane.
Yeah, Kane. Yeah. And that was going to happen because on MMA Down Under 1, I'd got fight of the night and he'd got submission of the night.
Mm.
And then I guess they matched up us to fight. But he had a car crash.
Oh,
I think it was two and a half weeks out. And, you know, obviously we're not expecting him to fight after that.
Mm.
And Kane obviously is equally as credible. So I wasn't going to question whether he was ready to fight or not.
Yeah, no.
So I'd been training in fight Kane mode up until that time to fight Kane. And then that fell through. So I just kept training.
Yeah.
And the opportunity to fight Kenny Jung came up because apparently he'd been brought down here for someone, and he'd had 10 plus fights at that point in time, but whoever that was wasn't gonna to fight him. Oh, it was something like that, something weird like that.
Yeah.
Where he just had been scheduled but didn't have an opponent. And Dave DeConti at the time was like, well, you don't have an opponent, you don't have an opponent, why don't you guys fight? And you know, I think that would have been my second fight.
So that, my understanding, was the one that every time the round ended, you were playing some wicked rubber guard.
Yeah, that's the one. And people bring it up because they're just like, what were you thinking? I didn't have a game plan for him. I think it was a mentality-based thing.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the day, I didn't know what I was going to do. I was scared.
Yeah.
I was scared because I didn't have a ton of experience. I was confident, but not confident to fight someone of that caliber. But at that point in time, you know, there was no amateur development system or anything like that. It was just, you're in the deep end or you're not in the pool. And I thought, I'm going to take this fight. Walking out to the ring was when I formulated a game plan for Kenny Young. The night before, I saw him at the weigh-in, and he was a legit lightweight. You know, I was a featherweight.
Yeah.
And he was a legit, he looked like a Turner compared to me. And I was afraid. Like, I'm not going to make any bones about it. I was afraid to fight him. But walking out there, I realized that we're in my hometown and I didn't have much to lose. So I just sort of needed to make it look like I wasn't afraid to fight him. So I was obviously nervous and I started with the fanfare. You know, I was just playing to the crowd and banging my foot and stuff like that. And
which was awesome.
I was a young kid and I did some stuff. I think it comes into that category. But, you know, it helped me. It helped me to bridge that gap to where I was ready to fight him. And I thought, all right, this is how basic I thought in my head. Okay. If I throw high kicks, he might catch it and take me down. If I throw low kicks, he might throw them back, which will make it easier for me to take him down. Mm. But don't start doing that straight away. Start with in and out movement and start striking him. And that's what I went with. And I think the only other thing was, if you make contact, take it to the ground in any way, shape or form. Because of what I'd seen from him, I was doing my own research on fights at that point in time. Every time he was on top, inside the guard, he would hug the body and put his hands on the mat. And I was thinking, okay, rubber guard, I can do that. That was a style that I was playing heavily at the time, whether it was MMA or not. And that's just kind of how it played out. I realized when I got in there and I had the adrenaline going that I was faster than him. So I was landing more, started throwing spinning kicks, started throwing some flashy stuff. And, you know, each round ended with me going for a submission, pretty deep submission. And, you know, I managed to take him down towards the end of the last round. And I was thinking, I remember thinking in my head, oh my God, I'm winning.
Yeah.
That's the type of stuff that can happen sometimes. And it was the main event. All that stuff had happened before that. And I'd won the fight and got on the microphone after and said some terrible things that I'll regret for the rest of my life. But the only thing that I did say that I don't regret was I tried to give as much respect possible to Dave DeConti, because he was behind the scenes at that point in time for MMA Down Under.
Yep.
And man, was he doing everything. You know, he was matchmaking, he was training people to fight. He was, the day before, he was sitting in saunas with guys trying to help people cut weight. And, you know, for a promoter or matchmaker to be going to that extent is unheard of. But it's just because it was the grassroots development of MMA in this state. We didn't have a solidified system yet. So he was trying to do everything he possibly could to make it happen.
Yeah.
And to make the show good enough. We had done a DVD earlier to present to the council about the rules for B class and C class rules. I was in the DVD, DeConti was in the DVD. You know, this is, we're going through step by step why the rules are applicable and how it's going to help MMA. And you know, it's just unimaginable that we had to go to that extent. And then lo and behold, UFC says, oh, we might come to Adelaide. All right, you got the rules, you got the cage, everything's okay.
Yeah. Like, okay. Hey, well, excellent. Well, you've obviously done a heap. And MMA's now, MMA in Adelaide as well, like you mentioned, they didn't have the amateur development. So DFC, and obviously you've got two of your real good fighters on that. Mm-hmm. The headlining, Bino is
the main event. Yeah, Bino is the main event against Ethan Dunia.
Yeah, so you've got the amateurs, that's a perfect way to introduce them. One other thing I'm noticing you're doing is your club, Trinity MMA, is you do trial weight cuts and trial fights. Yep. Is that correct?
100%.
Which I think is fantastic. Now, I don't know if every club's doing that, but to me, that's perfect, because I think you're learning how you're going to feel when you are dehydrated and rehydrating. So you've got that. You've got to be disciplined. So it's not all such a shock to the system when it comes to doing it seriously. So, well, not seriously. Obviously, a gym competition is just as competitive. But is that something you have thought of? Have you seen that somewhere else now that you've transitioned to the coaching side?
I definitely felt that it was something that was lacking before we broke away and became Trinity MMA. Real attention to detail and making sure that the systems are there. And it's all in the name of making sure it's done correctly, but also making sure that the fighter has an opportunity to have a positive experience in the fight, win or lose.
Yep.
How did you feel in your first jiu-jitsu competition?
Oh, absolutely terrible.
There's adrenaline dump. There's, you know, it's that unexpectedness of the pace and the ferocity. And if you're getting dropped in the deep end there, it's more that you have to fight rather than just fighting your opponent. But our club is, you know, I don't think it's anything special, to be honest with you. I look at what Farah Sahabi, the blueprint that he set out for a fight camp and, you know, a system, systems-based learning, that is, in my opinion, the best way to do it for a whole bunch of reasons. So point A, nothing's happened yet. Someone walks into the gym, they express the you know, the willingness and desire to fight, and how do you treat them from there on out? Well, you have to put things in front of them that they can achieve both internally and externally. So they have to show up, they have to come to class, they have to be in the fundamental classes first, fundamental striking, fundamental MMA, wrestling, no-gi. And they show skill and aptitude and consistency in those classes. They get invited to come to the advanced classes and they do the same system there. Mm-hmm. So they show their skill increase, they show their aptitude, they show their consistency. And then they get invited to fight team sparring, to, you know, come in and be a part of fighters' fight camps who are already matched and already fighting, and be a designated sparring partner for those guys to see if they can be accountable to those extra sessions and see if they can, you know, progress in that type of environment. Once they do, and once they we see that type of development in them, then we turn it around and we start looking at them. Okay, so let's sit down with the coaches and designate with you what a desired weight class will be. And we'll start putting systems in place for your weight cut. And that's trial and error that we've now made into a system based on Anthony Bino's weight cuts. So yeah, we bring up people from Fast Twitch, which is downstairs, and we're upstairs, to view the fight. View the fight. Those spectators are going to react differently to an educated crowd. So they might go, oh, and ah, and, you know, I'm losing, I'm winning. But, you know, we warm them up, we hit the pads, we bring them into the cage one by one. We have a referee, you know, they're vassed up, they're taped up, it's MMA gloves. It's, you know, as much a simulation as we can possibly do of a few of those, you know, important factors that go into making it more of a competitive feel and atmosphere. And we get a lot of good data from that. If they do well in that type of environment, we push forward, we search for amateur opportunities outside of the gym. If there's things that we need to work on, we take the time and work on them. And that's what I was that's what I was saying before. We want to set them up to have a positive experience, whether they win or lose. You can go in there and lose, and it's not the most negative thing in the world. It's always going to be constructive. You're going to be able to move forward from it. But if you're looking back and you're thinking, well, did my team really have my back? Did my coaches do enough? Did I do enough? That's the negative experience that we don't want people to have, because I have had it and I know people who have had it in some way, shape or form. And then they start questioning everything. That's the negative experience that we're trying to avoid. You know, you don't want to look back and go, I didn't leave every stone unturned. I actually didn't do what was necessary, and these people around me told me that I was ready.
It's
a real sport, man. First thing that happens is you get punched in the face. You can walk in there and win and be terribly hurt. You know, we want to make sure that, you know, these people that we spend time with and that are our friends, they might be our students, but they're not our steeds. You know, they're not our fighters. They're athletes within their own right. I don't own them. So I have a duty of care as a coach to make sure I guide them positively. That's what Trinity MMA, you know, when Mike Turner and I set out to do this business and do this venture, it was all about trying to cultivate a positive environment for guys to have in martial arts that what we had.
Well, it's only preparing them to the fullest. I mean, how can that not? That's completely them living you know, the preparation, completely toned on that. But do you find, on a lighter topic, the hardest task you've ever been faced with is Mike Turner's diet? Because I
that's a terrible question to ask. He's going to be so upset.
I bumped into Mike the other day, and he could.
Where was it?
Bone Club. And he could name that's every single... Sorry, Mike. He could name every single burger on there. And now I've heard a story about him...
Under the bus right now. Mike Turner, big speed bump. No. I can't... Look, Turner is one of the smartest people I know. He has all the science, he has all the data, and he follows it the way he wants to follow it. Anthony Biano, another coach at Trinity MMA, we may have differences in our approach, in our philosophies towards weight cutting and dieting and eating and all that kind of stuff. But I have to respect someone who can actually do it. I think that the hardest thing for us was viewing it and thinking in our head, this might be bad for Turner.
Yeah.
Because he's our friend. He's our good friend. And I don't think that, like, you know, making sure he can cut an astronomical amount of weight is the greatest thing. Yeah. I think that, you know, assessing where he's at right now in his career, and I can tell you right now, he's moving up to heavyweight.
Yeah.
Because
that's even scarier.
I want to see it. I want to see what a fully functioning, completely fueled, hungry, driven Mike Turner, I want to see what he can do. And I want to give him that opportunity. You know, there's been a lot of speculation about, oh, what's happening with Turner and all this kind of stuff.
Yep.
We're giving him the best opportunity to have a positive outcome in his career. And weight cutting, you see the trend, man. Mm. You see the trend. It's going.
Yeah.
And it should be going. Yeah. It should be going. I mean, I've seen Turner eat incredible amounts of food.
He's going to kick
my ass. It has nothing to do with weight cutting or diet or anything like that. It's just he's a tank.
Yeah.
He's a big guy.
He is.
He's a bottomless pit.
I'm going to get my butt kicked. For anyone that doesn't know, look up Mike Turner and I probably be watching my mouth. Especially if he's going the heavyweight, the Turninator will be a scary machine.
How fast can you run? That's the question.
Not that. Hopefully faster than Mike.
Then you're sweet.
Yeah.
I wouldn't worry about it.
And I would run. So, as for the fights that you have got coming up, and the main event.
Yeah,
that's not his first main event. Did he main event MMA Down Under?
Possibly could be his first main event. I think he main evented with Miles back in the day when it was for the lightweight championship.
I do remember that one. Yeah. I was there live for that one as
well. Yeah, that's right.
You've also got Jake. Now, is this a profile for Jake, or is this
amateur? Still amateur fight.
Yeah.
Still amateur. We're still looking through the development system for him.
Yeah.
And he's fighting Matt Modestak from Chow Kai Zen.
Yeah.
He's a great talent and he's a very hard worker. He's very versatile and he's very adaptable. So I think that one of the things for him, you know, especially early on when he started this amateur system, there was no amateur system in South Australia. So we were looking for fights outside of SA to build him as an amateur.
Yeah.
And he got incredibly strong, incredibly powerful opponents that he was able to overcome.
Yeah.
So I think if you look at why there's such a big rap on Jake, it's because of his talent and because of his skill level.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, we have not seen even a little bit of the potential of what Jake can do yet.
Well, Jake started
forward to it.
Yeah, Jake started progressively, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
And
yeah.
I tell you, I've never seen someone, you know, he's as hardworking and as driven and focused as anyone. And Lawson obviously guided him to go to a gym that was going to adapt what he wanted for his future. And Trinity seems like it's been the best thing for him, you know. He's such a fun guy to watch compete as well.
Yeah,
that's a comfortable, fast, explosive, but he's so hungry. Like, I really see a good future for him. And, you know, I'd assume you would as well. And this is just going to be a place for him to prove himself.
One of the best things I've seen out of Jake is he started to trust what he can do with his mind, with his intellect. He's a great athlete. And I'm sure for a long time, people have been telling him he's a great athlete. But when he starts to apply his mind to things like his diet, to his training, he independently researches and studies things that he can do for himself in terms of recovery and conditioning, that's when I've seen him come into his own, when he's really gained that confidence within himself to push forward and start to apply himself. Now, he's going to come to a point very soon where, it's going to come to a point very soon where people are going to be looking up to Jake in a big way. And I think that that's a trickle down effect. I could say all of the exact same stuff about Anthony Bynum.
Yeah.
All of the exact same stuff. He's a great friend of mine, and he's someone that I respect vastly for that growth and development that I've seen within him from a fighter who was pretty rudimentary with his skill set back in the day, to have continued to progress in the way that he has and applied his mentality and applied his intellect. He's a role model now.
Mm.
He's a role model within our gym, and he's someone that I love having around, and I wouldn't know what to do with him if I didn't have him around. I tell you that.
Yeah.
100%. He's a pillar in our club.
Well, I'm looking forward to it as well. So that's DFC Diamondback Championships.
Yeah.
I'm going to it, obviously.
Yeah, I'll be there.
I loved it, so I can't wait for that one. But yeah, so his opponent, is he a local, because you said
Ethan's
opponent. Who was?
Ethan Duniam is from Tasmania, and he is the current Minotaur lightweight champion as well. He managed to get a victory over Jesse Medina. And in his last fight, he managed to get a victory over Miles.
Okay.
And,
both savages.
Miles. Look, I don't want to take anything away from Ethan, and I know that Miles will never come out and say this, but Miles was really sick before that fight.
Okay.
And he couldn't come out to the second round because he could barely move. Like, Miles is one of the toughest and the best fighters I've ever seen in person.
Yeah.
And look, for that to happen to him was just so heartbreaking, man. And behind the scenes, I don't think he's ever come out and said that.
He has,
because not. He's that kind of guy. What was his post on Facebook? It was something like, we have good days, we have bad days. It's a hard life. He didn't want to take anything away from Ethan either.
Yeah.
You know?
Which really tells about
his character. I tell you what, man, that is a mark of a true professional. And I have infinite respect for Miles for doing that. Because you see a lot of stuff on Facebook or in social media that sounds very excusory, and it's a hard life. As Miles said, it's hard. You have ups, you have downs, and you can't take anything away from these opponents. And I've seen Ethan have wars.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a tough fight for Ant. No bones about it. You don't get one of those belts for nothing. And Ethan has a very interesting style. It's I think he comes from a Wing Chun or a traditional base. Okay. So his movement, he switches in and out of stance. He looks to side kick. He looks to push kick. He will shoot. He will grapple. He will wrestle. And he is in excellent shape.
So
everywhere you go, you've got to contend with something. But I think that's the thing. It's the same as Ant. Everywhere you go with Bino, you're going to have to contend with something. He's going to put forward some resistance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've grappled with Ant before, and he is just an ox.
It's tough. You
get but he's, yeah, he's quick as anything.
So. Yeah, he definitely is.
No, I can't wait for that. So on that side of it, that's your coaching, and obviously when you focus 100%. Does that to say that your fighting career is on hold? Would there be, you competed recently in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, jiu-jitsu.
Would there be an MMA return if something popped up for yourself?
Oh, or is man.
That your focus
now? We're going to go into the story now.
Please do.
No,
please
there's. Do. I'm not going to be fighting MMA anymore.
No, that's
long story short, I lost the desire to prove myself or to prove that I was better than someone else. I think there was a lot that went into that, but that's what it comes down to. I think a lot of people know that I had some difficulties with my health. I had a blood clot in my upper body and brachial axial sternal chest wall and sternoclavicular. So it was sort of around my armpit and spreading. It was 15 centimeter blood clot. And that was a couple of weeks before I was meant to fight Terry Balboa, who again is a great guy. Can't say enough about Terry. And that was a very long time in my life where coaching is where my passion lies, but it also where my strength is. I started to look at studies outside of fighting that could aid me and benefit me in that realm. So things like personality identification, individual athlete identification, game planning, programming, this type of thing that was going to set me apart and was going to benefit not just me, but athletes who came and asked me to help them. I wanted to be able to help them back. I was still pretty young at that time. So there were people my senior asking me to participate in an authoritative role, and that was quite daunting to me. So you can imagine, I wanted to live up to that. I wanted to make sure that I was doing the right thing there. And I've found that through time, this is where I've found my place.
Yeah.
In this whole thing. So that being said, there's not going to be any MMA for me anymore. And one of the biggest reasons is I can't cut weight.
Okay, yeah.
So the blood clot means that I can't dehydrate my body. I can't, you know, put myself in that kind of risk or danger.
Yeah, health comes before anything.
And look, I am a walking poster child of the dangers of weight cutting. I'm 85 kilos, and I was trying to cut to 66.
Yeah, you used to cut some crazy numbers, didn't you?
And you used to see me. I was a scarecrow. And then when people saw me after that, they were like, oh, wow, you've looked good. You've put on weight. That's good. Yeah. And I was thinking in my head, I was like, what? Like, that's good that I've put on weight. But no, I must have been looking pretty poor, pretty gaunt.
Well,
but
some my of the problem is like what you sucked into the face quite large. Yeah, that kind of weight cut. But for you to be down to 66... Like,
scary.
You know, you're a thick dude. Yeah. Like, yeah,
it's scary.
You're dainty. Yeah.
And my biggest mistake was, you know, I wanted to stay ready. I wanted to take fights. And I was trying to stay at that weight. I wasn't trying to cut to that weight. So I was constantly dehydrated. I mean, the blood clot didn't just occur overnight. It was built through time. So there was a lot of speculation afterwards by doctors and medical staff as to why this would happen. Someone who's young, fit, doesn't drink, doesn't smoke. Why would this happen to this person? And a lot of scary words were thrown around, like lymphoma and cancer, and they wanted to do a biopsy on me. Wow. And, you know, they shouldn't do that. I got told that because of the size of the clot and the how close it was to my heart and lungs and the potential for a pulmonary embolism or a shard to break off and go into my brain was super high.
Wow.
They were considering taking the arm at some point in time as well. So, you know, and this all came about why? We found out later through the hematologist. Constant dehydration to chronic dehydration, training through pneumonia, forced clotting syndrome from being an athlete since I was 9 years old, and overtraining.
Yeah, wow.
So that perfect storm of terrible, terrible mistakes led to this thing that changed my life forever. Yeah. When that happens, man, it's so cliched. You know, when you have that, you might die, this might happen, those consequences are put right in there in front of you. So cliche, but it just shows you who cares, shows you who your friends are, and it shows you the things that are important in your life.
Yeah.
And as I was saying, I'd never given myself any credit as to what I could achieve outside of being an athlete. I was a high-level swimmer when I was 9 to 13. I held state records and national records and in sprint freestyle and butterfly. I played rugby union all the way through that. And I started cross-training in boxing and Muay Thai at 12 years old because I had a smart coach whose name was Adrian Adam, and he was a former Romanian Olympic coach. And he said, cross-train in martial arts to increase your abilities, increase your efficiency and your rating for your arms, your speed, your power, your balance. And it worked. It worked. When I was a young kid, I had, you know, a lot of age records and stuff like that.
Mm.
Started wrestling when I was 14, started jiu-jitsu at 17, had an MMA career at 22 or 20 or something like this. So there was never a time that I wasn't in some sort of athletic system.
Yeah.
And there's good and bad things that come from that. Obviously, those bad things were a little bit more unforeseen than the good things. But, you know, any advice I would give to someone is make sure you have a multifaceted life. Make sure there's things outside of what you do that you can go to, because don't let it consume you or define you as a person. You know, that's what happened to me. Throughout that time, I was so hyper intense. I was not a great person. I was arrogant. The things I would say, the way I would think, I was just so adversarial, and I had to be like that. I had to be like that because in order to fight, you have to have a necessary level of ego. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, don't think for a second that I mean negative ego. I mean, you have to believe that you can win. You have to believe that you're better than people.
Yeah.
And you have to strive to get even better than you are right now so that you can keep being that good. Like, if you don't believe that and you lose that desire like I did,
yeah,
quit. Let it go. Because you'll get hurt.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that I look back at now and I'm like, well, what were the good things? The good things is that I was exposed to a lot of different coaching staff. I was exposed to a lot of different methodologies and ways to approach things. So swimming at a high level, you know, different martial arts being coached by different people.
Yeah.
Those brought me a great amount of perspective as to how I could implement similar coaching strategies.
Just going to say, yeah, taking that from each individual and adapting it into an mm-hmm. area of focus, that and also having a voice that you can hear over any competition.
I keep hearing this. I don't know. I can't hear my own voice. Apparently,
you don't even talk loud. You just hear it clear. It separates. Yeah, I could have done this without microphones.
Oh,
it separates anyone else's voice. So, not to make light of it. I mean, fantastic coach. I think you coaching, whether it is an early transition of a young age, is it's going to benefit so many people to have you there. And I think Trinity's going to grow and grow and grow, and people will seek you out for coaching. Yeah. So, yeah, it's everyone's best for everyone if you're coaching them. I think you're going to reach more people that way.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope I can benefit people.
Yeah.
You know how it is. Jiu-jitsu. I think jiu-jitsu specifically, really. The community feel behind it. I mean, have a look at what Dan Lawson's been able to achieve.
Yeah.
Dan Lawson's been able to achieve at Progressive Jiu-Jitsu. Such a community and family environment.
We've got a great unique vibe. Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
That's not lost on me. That kind of stuff is very, very important. And there's a lot of people that just come out of the woodwork in the community to support.
Yeah.
And it's great to see. Like, I think about guys like Leonardo Arruda, Pete O'Shea, Michael Toyama, Greg Toyama, Dave DeConti, Matt Jones. I mean, these people, they have done so much for the development of jiu-jitsu in this state that I could only hope to be in the same category with those guys. And Kane Gelling as well.
Oh.
Kane Gelling most recently, I think, he's putting jiu-jitsu in South Australia on the map in quite a big way. It's fantastic to see. He might not know it, but man, I've respected him for so long. I've looked up to him for so long. And what he was able to do with his academy has inspired me, like him traveling. And I'm seeing this, I'm seeing him travel and I'm seeing him compete. I'm just like, man, that's what's up.
Yeah.
And that's how you got to be. And that's putting jiu-jitsu on the map right here. And again, like what they're doing for the development in South Australia is fantastic.
An amazing level coming out of that gym.
Amazing. Have a look at Declan. So,
yeah.
Declan is amazing. And he's a good guy. Like, he's a person you would hang around. It's fantastic.
He's very deceptive on what you see and what you get. I competed against him and it was over pretty quick. He looks like a child. He looked like, I think he might have been a child at the time. He's great.
But then you look around the place and it's not so uncommon. You have a look at what's happening at Arruda right now and guys like Isaac Mitchell. It doesn't happen by accident. How long has Leo and Warwick been here cultivating that type of community and that caliber of academy? They're amazing at what they do. Matt Jones as well. Have a look at Matt Jones and what he's been able to achieve with ISO Health and the caliber of competitors that he's been putting out.
He definitely burst some great competitors for sure.
I think the other thing is that I have to mention is have a look what's happening with Grappler Power right now.
I got some cool things coming with Grappler Power, actually.
Everyone does. Everyone does. And you know why? They're here. They're here to support South Australian Jiu-Jitsu, MMA. Everyone's got some Grappler Power gear. The first Rashi I got from them, I came up with the idea for it, guys. I'm sorry.
It's the Bullet Club one.
Yeah. It's not called Bullet Club.
It's a submission.
It's a parody. It's a 10% parody. Brilliant. No, Submission Club, right?
Submission.
Best Rashi I've ever had. Best Rashi I've ever had.
Yeah.
I feel cool when I'm wearing it. I know cool isn't a cool thing to say, but I feel cool when I'm wearing my Grappler Power Submission Club Rashi. And we've been in constant talks with them. I've known Dan Dwyer forever.
Yeah.
You know, I've just met James, who's a fantastic guy. We have a lot of similar interests.
Yeah.
And you have a look at what they're doing for the community in South Australia, and then have a look at what they're achieving internationally. Oh, Apple Apparel is going everywhere.
They really are. They are grinding hard. And it's plenty good things, and they're pushing. And that's so cool to see that come out of Adelaide as well. Yeah,
that's right.
They're reaching everywhere. I was just in talks with them recently, and just things they're showing me is like 10th Planet stuff. And also, it's from everywhere.
So yeah,
they're really reaching out to everybody. They're not just thinking, oh, we're just smart getting some clubs in Adelaide.
Mm.
They are branching out internationally. It's amazing to see.
I mean, we saw Dan and, you know, I can't remember where he was. I think he met up with Frank Barker in Tasmania when they were all down there for a submission comp.
There's a competition.
Man, they look like they're having an awesome time. They must be gelling for a reason, you know. There's two high-level guys, you know, high-level minds thinking that they're trying to put something out there and trying to make something happen for the community. So, you know, I can't say enough about what martial arts has given me and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But look, when you see it giving back to other people, I think that's the most rewarding thing.
Yeah.
When you see people cultivating communities and being, you know, being in a part of cultivating a community, that's awesome. That's what you get.
It's great. Yeah. So, yeah, the one thing I was going to touch on, you mentioned about the submission club, Rashi.
Yeah.
So you are one of the subjects that you're a big nerd on. You do love your pro wrestling.
Pro wrestling, yep.
So, massive. Okay. I've got into that probably over the last year. I'm back into it. Mm. So I was huge on it as a kid.
Goes, though. But I think July 1st is the next one, right?
Next pro wrestling show. Yeah. Well, I want to go. Yeah. So I know that
I'm
a bunch of people. Hey, if you go along, I'm gonna tag along with you, show you the experience of it.
St. Clair Rec Center, Wrestle Clash, Wrestle Rampage. It's gonna be awesome.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna be there screaming my head off. Tommy Knight.
Sounds like such a fun environment to be in. Yeah. So
it's super fun, man. I like, you know who Kenny Omega is?
No.
Now you're going to know. Okay. There have been some pretty high profile matchups recently in New Japan, a series of matches from Okada and Kenny Omega. Okay. And that's sort of like the tip of the iceberg in a way with what New Japan has to offer. And just the personalities behind those people. And you see something like the Young Bucks being the elite ongoing web series on YouTube and stuff like that. And you get to see behind the scenes, they're traveling, you know, they're training, the type of personality that they are and what they put into the business and the interactions between them and some of the veterans. And then even some of the younger guys, you know, that how they all aid each other and the respect that's involved. It's super interesting, man. Super interesting.
Clearly, I haven't been as deep as yourself. All a bit beyond me. But
Kenny Omega, he probably inspired me to start learning Japanese.
Mm. You know?
I think I've always wanted to learn a language.
And I won't butcher what you're studying. You are studying right now.
Yes. Japanese. Yes, Japanese and linguistics. Just learning how to learn languages. I've always wanted to learn. Yeah. It's difficult in university. I don't have a lot of time.
Yeah.
But, I'm not trying to cram for a test, you know what I mean? So whether I get good scores or not, or grades or whatever, it's neither here nor there. I'm trying to learn a language. Yeah, that's right. But I've always wanted to learn a language. I really like sumo wrestling. I really love sumo. So I want to go over and watch some sumo. And if I'm going to travel somewhere like Japan, I want to make sure that I've, you know, made a commitment to learning a language and learning the culture before I go anywhere or do anything.
That would be cool. Yes. It's for a different
sumo, man. Don't sleep on those sumos. They're amazing athletes as well. Any grappling skill, you know, you have a look at Hakuho and Kotoshogiku and a lot of these high level Yokozuna at the moment, man, they're the best of all time right now.
Yeah. I'll tell you, if there's a sumo back to running, I'll be running away from because I ain't grappling. If they get on top, it's a game over.
Oh, dude, the classics are, you know, those old Pride fights and the UFC fights when you get this random sumo and it can just go either way.
Yeah. Well, that was, I mean, the very first UFC broadcast fight was, I mean, I guess he'd be considered sumo and his teeth kicked across the commentary table. Savage.
Not
that
fun.
That was brutal.
Not fun. No. UFC 1, 2, 3, not fun.
No. It's just a different one. So much better now. It is so much better now.
Yeah, but aren't we taking a turn now? You know what I mean? Mm. Like, every time I look and I turn on the TV or whatever, Facebook feed.
Yeah.
There's a lot of negativity getting thrown around.
Yeah.
And it's see.
Pass along.
Yeah, man. Apparently, you've got to be a douchebag to make money. And I think the clearest depiction of this is actually Gegard Mousasi. Because Gegard Mousasi is not a douchebag.
Mm.
And he has had to openly admit that, well, I better start talking shit. Otherwise, I'm not going to get these fights that I want. And I'm not going to make the money that I need to make for my family or my career and my life.
Yeah.
It's like, dang, this is what they've been presented with, this dynamic that plays out. They're just so hardworking and actually respectful of each other, but they've got to get on that mic and start selling themselves in some way, shape, or form by trash talking.
Which I guess, it does come from that pro wrestling type style. The talk is going to be there with your side.
So I guess so. I mean, pro wrestling is a shoot, you know? It's a work. It's not a shoot. A shoot is when someone is being truthful. A work is when someone isn't being truthful. They're just playing the game. They're working it, you know? And I think there's something to be said for that. Like Chael Sonnen, that's what he's all about.
Yeah.
He is not that person. He is not the American gangster. He has a life outside of that. He presents himself in that way for the fanfare and the notoriety and to sell the fights. And he's gone really far before.
Yeah.
He's said some terrible things.
Yes.
Terrible things. But it's a work, you know, and the line gets crossed when people are saying terrible, terrible things, but you just don't know. Is that real? And are they saying that for real? Or they're just saying that to get fights?
Yeah.
We don't want that to be the road that MMA goes down. Because you think about maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, right? The guys who are around at that time, Anderson Silva, George St. Pierre, like these people were the representatives of MMA in the way that MMA needed to be represented or wanted to be depicted. Yes. They were the martial artists. Yeah. You know, they were the top tier, high level, pure martial arts guys who had completed their skill sets and are now competing in MMA, and they look amazing and they're respectful and hardworking. And now it's sort of shifted. You know, all of that still exists, but it's glossed over. Because you need to sell yourself in some way, shape, or form. And I have infinite respect for the guys who sort of don't do that. And Demian Maia is the first and most amazing example of that.
Yeah.
He's living by his skills and what he can achieve inside the octagon. And unfortunately, he's just getting looked over at the moment. I can't believe he got injured as well.
I hadn't even heard about this.
Oh, man, he got injured and he's not fighting Woodley.
I did not hear about that.
Yeah, heartbreaking.
Oh, yeah, that
absolutely
sucks.
Heartbreaking.
No, he is certainly a guy that is, I mean, if you've ever seen him in jiu-jitsu, if you ever seen him fight, just the way he shuts people down as well. Like, it's just, must be what the jaws are like.
Man, he makes good people look not that great. I remember being injured all the time and stuff like that, just watching volume 1-7 of Demian Maia, Science of Jiu-Jitsu. I was injured, came back, and now I had back control, you know? It's amazing. But, you know, that guy doesn't have to talk about it. He just goes and does it. And it's pretty good.
Yeah, look, I mean, it really has taken a turn of recent. I feel like since the McGregor wave, it has just gone that way. Because I think, although, you know, Chael Sonnen did it, and there's been people in the past before, you know, like Tito used to talk crap when it was him and Ken Shamrock.
Yeah,
it goes real far back. Sonnen did it. People enjoyed it. It was, you know, a lot of people hated him for it.
Mm-hmm.
But since the McGregor waves come in, I feel like everyone's really, you know, the fighters have just really got pissed off with it and thought, well, I've got to talk. And now, look at McGregor though. Now he's rewarded with it. We can't not touch on the boxing match.
Yeah.
What are your views? I'd love to hear your breakdowns, how that may be, how you think about if it's a good, who is good and bad for.
It sets a precedent. That's for sure. Like you're right when you said, that's a rewarded behavior. The UFC have rewarded Conor McGregor for his behavior.
Mm.
And that is dangerous, you know? And look, is it a work? That's what I was saying before. Did Mayweather's camp or did Mayweather himself call up Conor and be like, hey man, look, if we do this right,
yeah,
you know, we're going to make excess of $100 million. What would you do for $100 million?
Well, that's the thing, yeah.
Of course he's going to take a boxing match or something like this. You know, is it good for the UFC? Probably not. Is it good for boxing? Probably not.
Yeah.
Is everyone going to watch it?
Yes.
Everyone's going to watch it. I'm going to wait. Everyone wants to see what happens. Mm-hmm. And it's like the Instagram matchmaking of the century. You know what I mean? It's not a lot of purists like it, but it's going to garner a lot of attention for both sports. So in that way, is it negative? Is it bad press is good press? Or is, you know, it's really hard to decipher. In terms of the fight itself, man, Conor's had a lot of top flight experience recently. He's never had any boxing fights, that any pro boxing matches. Floyd is undefeated in boxing and the boxing rule set for a reason. And not just the rule set, but the scoring he understands. You know, he's slick. He makes you miss. He's watching you. He does exactly what's necessary to win round by round.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's the definition of a solid shot? You know, how can Conor land on him solid enough to do some damage? You know, it's really... it's quite up in the air. I think that the other thing that, you know, I've talked to a few people about is one of the things that makes Conor so deadly in MMA is his distance gauging and his control of the distance. So he doesn't just do that by landing a left cross over and over again. He does that by his teep, his side kick. Mm-hmm. He's sliding in and out of that range. And when you try and take that range away, you get punished for it heavily. Yeah. But he establishes that range with all of his limbs. You know, so it's going to be, you know, more difficult for him to decipher in a competitive environment that type of range change. Because let's face it, do you think he can't box? Do you think he doesn't know how to box? Do you think he's not boxing in the gym right now? Like, it's not going to be that foreign to him.
No.
But the competitive nature of the boxing ring is going to be more foreign to him than it is to Floyd.
Yeah.
Look at it like this. What do you think would happen if Floyd fought in the UFC?
Well, exactly. It's going to be that complete different area. He's going to end up on his back. He's going to get a leg kick. It's going to be a completely different nature. So those things that he can box in the gym all the time he wants, but it's that other side of it, the boxing science side that will come out that may find him lost.
Yeah, look, I mean, the way I see it is it's like if you're playing footy, right? And to play AFL football, you need to be almost, you know, a top tier long distance runner these days, the amount of miles you're doing. But there's other skills that you designate your time to. You know, ball skills, kicking skills, playing skills, tackling, this type of thing. So if you were the best runner in the AFL, do you think you could out-marathon a pure marathon runner? It's that kind of thing that we're talking about the top tier elite. And in this conversation with Mayweather and Conor, we're talking about the world champions, the best in the world.
Yeah.
And that's just a different caliber.
Yeah.
And there's tons and tons of guys who are trying to reach that caliber. A lot's been said about Mayweather doesn't do well against left-handers, and Conor's bigger than him. So is Canelo Alvarez.
Yeah.
He sat in the pocket and traded with him. Like, they're top tier for a reason.
I need to fix this.
Yeah, as I'm
finishing off that, I mean, it just could end terribly. Who knows what they've got planned together, though? I mean, they may even know in advance on what the plan is. Who knows? But I'll be watching, as everyone will be watching.
Everyone will be watching. That's right. So have they achieved their goal? I think so. No, all the conversations that I've had with people have been expecting Mayweather to win this fight.
Yeah, but
so
I'll admit I have got money on Conor.
Well, why wouldn't you? The betting odds are pretty amazing.
I put money in, yeah. We got $100 on
it. I don't have any money. I'm broke,
I know. Okay, no, I might be busting your ass. But look, I can't let this go this far without bringing up Batman.
Oh, yeah, we're getting there, are we?
So, and obviously the recent passing of Adam West must have been, did I get the name right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's huge, obviously, for Batman fans. But how has this started? What, I mean, since I knew you, it was like you're just a Batman fan. It's just that's what it is.
Yeah.
Is it just from a kid? What started this?
I think the first ever action figure I ever got as a kid, as a small child, was the Joker from the Batman animated series.
You still have that?
I still have that.
Yes.
It's just grown from there. It's become this massive thing in my life. You know, I tried to hide it through primary school and high school. People didn't know that I was into Batman. Meanwhile, yeah. I'm amassing this collection that is, you know, three cabinets full now, and I have stuff in, yeah, safes and stuff like that. It's just stuff that I can't put in my collection. I've never taken photos of it either because I feel worried that people are going to break in and steal my stuff. I know they're not going to do that, but
so, yeah, you got a bit of
I'm going to be some careful.
Serious collectibles, yeah. In there, though.
But I think Batman.
Is this why you broke?
Yeah, it's probably because I'm getting comics all the time and memorabilia. You know, but it's one of those things, you know, like everyone has something that they can hold up and say, this has been a little bit of guidance for me.
Yeah.
And Batman is human, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's a very relatable story. There's tragedy and there's loss within his origin story, you know, about how he's lost his parents. So he's channeled that into something that is constructive and driven, and he's made himself more than what he could have been. But at the same time, he is flawed. He is incredibly flawed. Mm. He is a psycho in a way. He runs around wearing a massive bat suit, you know? So he's a good depiction of what that can be. A really interesting theory that I really, really like is Batman's major villains are depictions of what he could have been. So the Riddler, you know, just going into that complete obsessive compulsive minute details. He could have been the Riddler. He could have ended up like that. Someone who was obsessed with that. Two-Face, you know, having dual sides of his personality. Obviously he's Bruce Wayne and he's Batman, but he could have ended up like Two-Face where he couldn't decipher one was stronger than the other, and it would be like a more evil based scenario. You know, Scarecrow, fear. He could have been consumed by his fear of what happened to his parents and consumed with, you know, not even gone outside his house. And the Joker as well, like a complete break from a detachment from reality and just him falling into anarchy and nothing matters anymore. My parents have, you know, I've lost my parents right in front of my eyes and there's no reason to play the game anymore.
Yeah.
So it's interesting in that way. And the question that I always get asked is, well, who would win? Who would win in a fight between Batman and Superman? And the answer to that question is, refer to the tape. Because we know that Batman wins that fight. Yeah. In the comic books and the movies, however you want to look at it, Batman wins.
I love it. That's way more deep than I expected the story to be coming out of my life.
Batman's huge. I think about how many Batman comics I've read and how many stories there are.
There's a house of
stuff. There's movies that are terrible. And then there's comic books that are fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, they have the best authors and illustrators in the world working on these things. And DC Comics is a massive powerhouse. So they're pumping out quality. There's things that I agree with and I don't agree with, but I'd still rather read them. You know, when people ask me, like, oh, are you looking forward to the movie and stuff like that? Oh, man, I get comics every week. I'm set.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is where it's at.
I love it. And that, I mean, that has been like your crew as well. So
yeah,
your martial arts career seemed like he's all sort of had. You were kind of like, see, I'm going to butcher it. What do you call it when it's the whole crew? What's the movie? I don't even know.
Justice League.
You were like the Justice League of Adelaide.
So Trinity MMA, right? Okay, this you're getting the scoop right now. I'm letting the cat out of the bag.
Yeah.
Trinity MMA, striking, grappling, and submissions. That's what it's all about, right? It's the three of those things coming together. But a joke that I made in Canberra years ago, before Trinity MMA ever came about, was I was there with Maylin Lau and Mike Turner.
Wonder Woman, Superman.
Yeah. Thinking, this is Superman, this is Wonder Woman, and this is Batman. And we're all on this little journey together. We're going to be fighting on Brace. This is like the Trinity right here, because at that time there was a really prominent storyline called Trinity. And there was the trio teaming up, yeah. Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman. And we thought, oh, this is like Trinity MMA, you know? And then when it came time to try and think of a name for a club, yeah, that may have snuck in there as well. So it's an in-joke between us, and we just got to make sure we're all sticking around at the club to make it viable.
Yeah, the Justice League of Adelaide, though. It really is. This was like the most badass nerdy comic book
people ever. Yeah. I know, we know what we are.
Yeah.
We're the nerd club. That's right. Fine. Everyone's got their own thing. We're the nerd club. We play Warhammer. We read comics. You know, we play video games.
And kick ass occasionally.
And sometimes.
And then train warriors to go.
It can happen.
It's a very unique lifestyle. And that's one of the biggest things I wanted you to come on and have a chat is, not many people are doing it like that. You know? So you've really created your own, nothing's fake about it, you're doing what you're all passionate about.
I think it's pretty important to do that and have a healthy respect for what everyone else is doing. You know, at the same time, like, we are what we are. If people don't like me or my personality, I can sort of see why. You know, I'm not everyone's cup of tea. I can acknowledge and respect that.
Definitely.
Like, but at the end of the day, we're all really doing the same thing. And I think that, you know, I was having a conversation today with a cool guest that we have over from Steve Kennedy's gym, Kick-Ass MMA, which is amazing. Those guys are fantastic. Steve is awesome.
Yeah.
Danny's come over and we were talking about this today, how there's like, no matter where you go, there's like that weird politics stuff that goes on and it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Like, so there's people can have a personal grievance, right? And that's one thing. If you don't like someone personally, you've had an experience, a firsthand experience with them, something happened, then you're probably going to have to resolve that face to face. But something that's really weird that happens in jiu-jitsu is people like denigrate others for doing the exact same thing that they do. Guess what? Everyone's doing arm bars. Same, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone's doing triangles. Everyone's doing heel hooks. It's the same. Yeah. Like, these words that people use, the best, better, you know, we're the best team. That's, you know, it's finite. There's only one best, right? But I think what that denotes is they have confidence and pride in the team that they're from. And that is fantastic. Yes. That's fine.
Yeah.
But when you start going, we're the best, they suck, or we're better than them, or you think that, or you put that into your jiu-jitsu or something like that, that's when it all falls flat. Like, have confidence in yourself, but don't denigrate others. Like, I've seen YouTube videos, man, online, of people who are claiming to be, like, politically neutral and all this kind of stuff, and I'm like, yeah, but then you watch the rest of the video, and it's like, there's a quote from it that is, we have the best culture in the world, right? And that's a pretty big claim.
It is.
And also in the video, they're talking about a recent comp that they went in and how everyone else wasn't being respectful and wasn't shaking hands, and the referees were coaching their teammates, and, you know, there were arrogant black belts walking around who think they're top stuff, and there was big roided meatheads there. And this is in the same video where he's just said that his club has the best atmosphere in the world, the best culture in the world. And it's like, all that good stuff, all that positivity, and then it just falls away. And that's how politics happens. That's where that comes from. And it's so unnecessary, man. It's so unnecessary. Like, we're doing the same stuff.
Yeah.
And all that work that's been done to build up the community, like the guys I was mentioning before, you know, they're all working towards the same goals as well.
Yeah.
I don't think that there's the best. I think that as a collective, we can be pretty good. But I don't know who the best is. Maybe need to check like world championship footage or something like that.
Nah, mate, and everyone's got a different definition and idea of who's best anyway. Yeah, so who cares? It's just
My advice though is like, try not to take too much ownership over stuff. Like, oh, I'm the best at doing this, or this is my move or my me. Like, this doesn't work, man. Like,
no, not at all.
You can have so much unique thoughts and pathways within jiu-jitsu specifically, but you can't own anything. Like, your creative process is yours and yours alone. And that's what you own. You don't own techniques that everyone does. It's really weird, man. It works out like that. But obviously, I've been doing it for a long time. I was awarded a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu,
which is massive.
And I think that I have a lot to learn. I don't think that there's any one technique that I use that I can really say I own and that's mine.
Mm.
No one else can do it like me.
Yeah.
No? Doesn't exist.
Well, for others that roll, it does certainly feel like.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I honestly don't think so.
No, I mean, it's a hard thing to perfect anyway, and I don't know if you can perfect it.
No.
You know, especially something like jiu-jitsu. Yeah. It's very diverse and different ways work for everyone. So.
And that's why so many people are so into it, but because it's so inclusive in that way. When you're in a team or in a group of people,
you did sort of shout out to everybody.
Yeah, shout out to everybody. Super happy to be on the show, man. Like, just an opportunity to come in and have a good chat with a nice person and talk a lot for a long time.
That's what we want you on here. Now you can talk. Super intelligent,
just intelligent,
cool ideas, and a unique brain. So it's fun. Now that's the sort of thing that I want to encourage and get on here. So it's awesome.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
The fight's coming up. What do you know? The date of
July 16th. Jake Chenoweth and Anthony Bino from the MMA. He will get upset with you if you don't pronounce it. Chy, the whole family. Chy, and they know exactly what I'm talking about. There's pride there.
Done. Well, I can't wait to watch Jake do his thing, train with him, mates with him. I think he's in a fantastic, along with Ann as well.
Yeah. Diamondback FC doing a lot for MMA in South Australia. We've got to get out there and support him. Yeah, got to get out there and support him.
Actually, one thing I've said it to the guy. I actually wrote him a message.
You were saying our goodbyes.
I'm going to touch on one more thing. It's just a quick shout out to the referee they've been using.
Yeah, Greg.
He's been amazing.
He's the best.
Like, I feel like the fighter in a safe environment. So they get looked past a lot because everyone always talks to the refs. But if he ever watches this, I have gone out of my way to do a shout out and say that guy's doing a fantastic job. I hope they keep him on because it's a safe environment for all the fighters. I think he's doing awesome.
100%. He's super professional as well. Every fight show that I go, he's there.
Yeah.
And we're behind the scenes. We always take time to talk to each other. He's from South Australia. He's trained jiu-jitsu. He's one of the boys.
Awesome. All right, we won't get into another topic. We'll wrap it up there, but appreciate you coming on.
Man. Thank you very much, man. Let's go play Pokemon.
Let's go. That's one thing that I'm nerdy on. I won't hide it.